Hello, everyone. This is Luke John Louis, the host of the Deep Voice Man Show. Thanks for joining us today. We have a treat in store for you guys. Our guest is Craig DeVizio. And for three decades, Craig has worked as a trainer and a coach. He teaches folks skills in the areas of job interviewing, career development, assertiveness, work performance feedback, leadership, and team building. In his first new book that's been published, I Got the Job, he explains how to best prepare and perform for a job interview and to have a successful job hunt. He also has an online course for people who rather listen than read that's also titled I Got the Job, which explains as well the best way to prepare and perform for a job interview and to have a successful job hunt. Particularly now, this is a subject that Craig is very passionate about with the pandemic, with the long stretch of high unemployment that we as a nation has been facing. This is an issue that's dear to his heart. And so I consider him an expert in all things workplace related. And he's someone who has degrees in psychology and counseling from Virginia Tech and Georgia State University. He was also a student athlete while he was at Virginia Tech. And his resume includes working with NASA, the space agency, being involved with the 1996 Summer Olympics in Atlanta. He's also been a U.S. Army helicopter crew chief. He's also been given the award of the NJCAA Coach of the Year. And for fun, he drives a Corvette, a Harley-Davidson, and also speaks Spanish and is a martial artist and an inspiring saxophonist. So we're very blessed to have him here. And he's a very busy man, so he's able to carve out some time in his packed schedule to sit down and have a chat with us. So thank you so much, Craig, for coming on. And I guess to start off, I guess we'd love to know your background and how you first gravitated towards what you do today.
Luke, let me first say thank you very much for inviting me. It's a real honor to be on your show. After I got my degrees in psychology and counseling, my first job was to work as a running a career center at the local college. I started the interviewing process way back when, teaching college students how to interview, write a resume, network to get their first job, that type thing. I taught in the college for 10 years, taught a number of different courses. And when I left the college, I hired on to two different training companies. So now they hired me as a trainer. I learned their material, and then they sent me out over the nation to deliver that information. I did that for about 6 years, and some of the companies, Luke, that I was teaching in said, hey, we really like your training style. Have you ever thought about starting your own business? You know, what other courses can you teach? Because we'd be interested in hearing that and possibly hiring you. So I actually kind of got drawn out into my own business. And, of course, now I've been doing my own business for 32 years. And my two most popular courses are the interviewing course and the leadership feedback course, the ones that you mentioned in your introduction.
Wow, that's amazing. And thank you for sharing your story. It's interesting how you conducted many interviews, and I guess that helped you to hone your skill on how to best do an interview and how to best for on the other side of it for the interviewee, how they can best.
I've been teaching interviewing now, Luke, for about 40 years. I have personally conducted thousands of interviews, and I teach interviewing from both sides of the table. I have a course where I teach interviewers how to design the interview, how to design the questions, how to evaluate the candidate's performance, and I have a course where I teach the interviewee how to do everything right to be the candidate that they select. So I've got both sides of the table. The one thing that I feel is extremely on target right now is I mentioned that I was working for some training companies. One of those was one of the three largest career consulting companies in the world. I was the number one trainer in the Atlanta office, so I had my choice of what companies I wanted to work in, but it was an outplacement company. So everybody who was in one of my classes for a total of 6 years had just lost their job through no fault of their own. So that is very, very similar to, unfortunately, the millions of people that we have out there now who are in that same situation. They, you know, it's unfair. It was an injustice. And now they're struggling to get back to work. And so I know that audience well.
Wow. That's amazing. And, you know, you're putting that experience to good use now. And it's so important for people to find work, because obviously with a job, there's a certain sense of dignity when you have a job.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And you're helping people, you know, obtain that dignity. You know, there are folks who will turn down unemployment insurance, or rather than turn it down, they rather not receive unemployment insurance, even if they're being paid more, because they want to work. You know, there's tons of people like that out there. And,
You know, I've been a counselor talking about personal issues. I've been a financial planner, helping people with their finances, and of course, helping people with careers. To be honest, I find the career piece has the biggest impact on the rest of their lives. So I completely agree with you about the dignity. When you take somebody's reason for being included in society, the fact that they're making a contribution to, when you take that away from them, it strips away lots of other things beyond just the job. And so that's why it's so rewarding to help somebody not only get a job, but get a job that they enjoy, because that has the great, it has the greatest impact on all the other parts of their life.
Right. And, you know, when you do work that you enjoy, they say you never have to work a day in your life. And that's so important to do, you know, have a job and have it do a job that you want to do, not be miserable at a job you don't want. And so that's a key part of it as well. And helping people to interview and to perform more effectively during a job interview helps with that, of course. And, you know, I'm impressed because you went from being an employee to an entrepreneur, which is sort of scary for some people. But you were able to take that plunge,
Brother, you are right on target. It was scary for me at the time. I was scared every single day for at least two years.
Wow.
For at least 2 years. I was scared every single day. And yet it was, I'll tell you what the trigger point was for me.
Well,
in addition to, in addition to companies saying, hey, if you create your own materials, we'll hire you. So I kind of had a ready-made audience for me. I was teaching. I was one of the companies sent me to Chicago, and I was teaching a workshop. And I knew that I was being paid at the time $400 a day to do the training. I asked the HR person, how much is the company that I'm working for charging you for this day? And they said $3,500. And right then, Luke, I said, I'm in the wrong business. I'm doing all the hard, I'm doing the heavy lifting here, and I'm getting a little bitty slice of the pie. And so that encouraged me to, you know, push past the fears and say, you know, if I really want to get to a different place in life, I'm not going to do it in the job that I have now. I'll make a living, but I really won't be able to provide the way I want to. And so that kind of helped me through that, through the fear.
Yeah. And, you know, I think so many people have that feeling, you know, working hard at a job and not being paid what they think they are worth, and realizing that maybe they're on the wrong side of the table like you did, but they're not able to make that leap like you were. And so many people make the leap, and oftentimes they don't succeed, which is unfortunate. But you made the leap and you succeeded, which is amazing. And, you know, it's interesting how you had a talent for teaching and people noticed it. And I think they had suggested that you do this, you know, on your own and be your own boss. And you were able to parlay that talent into an amazing career as an entrepreneur. And I think that's so important for people to realize their talents and to do what the best they can with their talents. And
I couldn't agree more. You know, as I talk to people about, you know, what career they want to go into, my belief is that everybody has a gift or a talent, or maybe even more than one. And it's a matter of identifying that, because if you can find a way to make a career doing that, Not only will you enjoy it more, but it will, you'll be doing it better than most people, and you will easily be doing it better. It's not something you're going to have to struggle with. When you find your talent or your gift and you start using it, you're going to find that things come really easy to you. You know, the funny story about me even getting into teaching was that I got my degrees in psychology and counseling, and to me, on a hierarchy, teacher was kind of midway up, and counselor was at the top. It was like, hey, I'm a counselor. I got skills, but anybody can teach. And that's what I thought. And they kept at the college asking me, why don't you teach? Why don't you teach? Why don't you teach? And I resisted it for about a year and a half. And finally I said, okay, fine. I will sub for this person for a week. Luke, I got in front of the classroom, and that was it. That was with it took me about 1 hour to determine this is what I want to do for the rest of my life. And and so I think that finding that sweet spot that capitalizes on who you are, what you stand for, what you're all about, what your talent is, when you find that, and I will tell you, because you mentioned the entrepreneur piece, if you're not working in an area that you absolutely have love and have a passion for, and that you find you do it easily, you will struggle.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's my belief anyway.
Wow. No, I totally believe you. I think that's so true, that people need to find out what their talents are and then work off that and find that sweet spot, as you mentioned. And obviously, if you can, you know, be your own boss while you're maximizing and taking advantage of your talents, all the better. So you're not, you know, you're not making, you know, just $400 a day like you talked about before. You're at the other side of the table. so that's amazing. And you know, it's interesting how so many teachers struggle, and so many teachers love their job, but it doesn't pay much, and they do it because they love their job, but if they could follow in your footsteps and be a teacher, but find a way, if not have their own business, but find a way to be paid for it, maybe have an online course or maybe write a book that, you know, maybe they can find a way that they can utilize their skill to be paid more, to be paid what they're worth.
There's a connection that needs to be made to what you're doing right now and where you want to go and what it's going to take to get there. I really benefited, Luke, by being a financial planner, because as I would help people with their finances, I saw individual after individual, family after family, who had made a lot of money and should have had a lot of savings, and yet there was nothing there. And so what they really did is, unfortunately, they backed themselves into a corner. They gave themselves very few options of changing their existence. So I was fortunate that this pandemic has really hit my business very, very hard. And had I not saved for a rainy day and done a really good job of it, we would be out of business right now, because we lost a ton of business through this. And the unfortunate part of a lot of the people who are out of work. Now, what I'm going to do is, if I can for just a second, I'm going to exclude from this comment all the people who were not working and making enough money to save money. They are excluded. All of the brand new businesses who were young start, and they had not made enough money to save any money. This comment is for all the people who were making a lot of money and didn't have the foresight to say there might be a rainy day one day, and now they're beating themselves up saying, you know, we made enough money to survive this pandemic, and if it's a business, stay in business, or if it's a person, to weather the storm. And so this is kind of this pandemic is really exposing that in a number of people, and you know, kind of hoping that they learn that lesson. And that is the only thing that saved my business. And I had been in business at 28 years. And and you know, of course, this is not the first time that this has happened. It happened to me earlier on, where we lost a lot of things and we were right on the edge. And so that planning for the world to fall apart is something that if you're going to be an entrepreneur, that needs to be at the forefront of your planning.
Right. I would say for entrepreneurs and individuals themselves, because you never know in a crisis. That's so important. And, you know, it's so sad when you see all these businesses that have been around for decades just close their doors and shutter. And it's very unfortunate. And, it's very sad. And, you know, you can't really even rely on the government for help. You know, you always have to rely on yourself as best you can. So having that rainy day fund is so important to survive.
I heard a statistic last month that and you may have more updated information now, but last month it was reported that over 400,000 small businesses had closed their doors permanently, and I really think that's an underestimate. You know, there's probably lots of people that close their doors that they're not even being recorded now. And and it is unfortunate. And you know, a lot of them are not going to come back. That was their one shot at getting out there on their own. And the world's, you know, going to be a different place in a lot of ways because of that. So at least for a number of years, you know.
Yeah, I would imagine so. You know, I was going to now, obviously, you've talked a lot about the current state of business and the economy and the job market. And obviously, it's not great. And but I'm curious now. Obviously, there's going to be a world post-pandemic where this thing goes away, or mostly goes away, hopefully sooner rather than later. Where do you see things in the future, and where do you see yourself in that future?
In my business, which was historically for 28 years, being in the classroom. I did all the traveling. I was probably on the road 150 to 200 days a year for 28 years.
Okay.
And I would do the traveling to your business to train your people, in your location. And of course we know that, grammar schools and high schools and probably colleges are going to go back to that at some point where they're going to have at least part of the courses they were doing in person. They'll do those. But I really don't think, Luke, to address your question, that companies are going to do that as much as schools are going to do that.
I think that
businesses have seen the benefit of virtual training and online training. Number one, it's more cost effective. Number two, it's more adaptable. You can do it on your own time at your own pace.
Yes.
I mean, there's a lot of advantages to it. And so I don't really see businesses going back to doing a lot of in-person training. Because of that, when we lost all the business, we had a decision to make, and it was, do I start beating on doors to try to do more in-person training, or do I convert the business to a virtual or online training?
Yeah.
So in addition to the book and the online course on interviewing, I also converted another course. That's my performance feedback course to an online course, and I'm right now working on another one. So I see, to answer your question, my future being in the arena of providing materials that you can access online and get all the training. And then, of course, communicate with me, you know, through the community and through asking questions and comments and YouTube channel, all that kind of stuff. So,
Particularly with social media, I'm assuming, and people can reach out to you. Well, thank you for that. For that answer, it's curious because you're I guess you're referring to a new normal. It'll never go back to the way it was pre-pandemic at all.
I don't think so. I could easily be wrong, but I think a lot of people, you know, the training arena had been moving in that direction,
right? Of course,
way prior to the pandemic.
And
to be honest with you, my business manager and I talked about converting some of our courses to online courses 10 years ago.
Right.
And we were so busy, I could never get around to it. And so the pandemic and losing all the business overnight just accelerated that process.
So
we didn't have a choice.
Yeah, but you could reach more people, I'm assuming, when you do it online versus in person or in a sense.
One of the really beautiful things about doing this, because it's a complete change for me, instead of being in front of a classroom and looking into faces, now I'm spending my days in a recording studio looking at a one-inch camera lens. And so that was a huge transition for me to replicate the same energy and enthusiasm that I have in the classroom. But the trade-off for that is as opposed to only the people in my classroom benefiting by it, and so now that audience, the number is limited. I can only train so many days a week, and there's only so many people that can be in my class. So there's an absolute maximum on the number of people that I can help via that format. Now, it's unlimited. And Luke, it is so exciting to get a comment. You know, my number one audience is the United States. My number two viewership audience for YouTube is the UK, Great Britain.
Wow.
My number three is Canada. Four is India. And I get a comment every day from somebody in India about, thank you very much for this video. They really, and so it's a different level of satisfaction for me hearing from somebody halfway around the world that I would never have gotten a chance to reach just being in the classroom.
Wow. Isn't technology something? That's amazing. And,
it is.
You know, it's interesting. Yeah. That I guess when you know, with crisis comes opportunity sometimes. And in Chinese, I think in Mandarin, the symbol for opportunity, the symbol for crisis includes opportunity, which is interesting. And I find it interesting how you also adapted. You know, when they say when life gives you lemon, you make lemonade, and you certainly did that.
Right.
And it's interesting how they say life is 10% what happens to you, 90% how you respond. So no matter what happens, it's mostly how you respond, and you're living proof of that.
It's interesting, Luke, because had my three biggest customers not decided to start doing training internally, so they're using their own people to do the training, and one of them decided to stop training. They stopped all training whatsoever, and the other one decided to change the courses that they did. So in a period of 40 days, and your listeners who've lost a job will appreciate this. I've been in business for 28 years, and in a period of 40 days, I lost 95% of the business.
Wow.
It took me 28 years to build.
Wow.
So we were stripped to basically nothing. And as I mentioned earlier, we had talked about converting to online training, and this just forced us there. It was like, it was kind of like the universe said, we really want you to do this, but you don't seem motivated enough on your own. So we're going to give you a little more motivation.
And
so, you know, through that, we said, we've got no other choice. That's what we've got to do. And I'm really glad that we did that. Because now, as you mentioned, we can reach a way bigger audience.
Yeah. And it's interesting how the universe can work that way. So you sort of put your back against the wall and sort of had no choice. The boats had been burned. There's no going back. You had to make this work. You had to do this, so to speak, and not just think about it or dream about it. And it's interesting how sometimes in life it's like that. But you certainly saw the opportunity and grabbed it. Yeah.
Yeah, and going back to the point that you've been making about the entrepreneurs, which I really like that you're emphasizing that, I think that concept is something that entrepreneurs at some point in their starting of their business, they need to make that decision. If you can't continue to tiptoe your way into it, at some point you got to say, I have got to burn the bridges and go forward with this. Because if I keep tiptoeing, I'm never going to reach the success that I want to reach.
Right. You know, it's sort of like, you know, failure's not an option. You know, put yourself in that situation where you got to make this work. You know, there's no retreat. Burn the bridges. You know, sometimes I guess you can put yourself in that situation yourself to do it, or sometimes the universe makes you do it. But either way, I think that's a big motivator for people to finally make that push to commit. You have to commit to the goal, to what you want to do. And obviously it's tough because obviously you were scared for the first 2 years, but you didn't go back. You didn't say, all right, you know, I'm not going to do this. I'm too scared. You pushed through that fear and you did it, even though there might have been some, you know, hiccups. You know, it's interesting how a lot of entrepreneurs, they have a rough time in the beginning. Sometimes they fail. You know, it reminds me of the story of the guy who founded Domino's Pizza. It's an interesting story. The guy filed for bankruptcy here and there, and it was rough, but he made it. We all know what Domino's is, right, today.
Right,
and you have Colonel Sanders. Yeah, and the Colonel, you know, he was told no 1,000 times, you know, but he finally got that yes. So I guess perseverance is one of those key traits for successful entrepreneurs.
And you know, discipline, work ethic. I mean, you know, I understand the comment. You know, if you love what you do, you never work a day in your life. It's like I personally don't agree with that. I work my butt off. And I love what I do, but it's still work, but it is work that is worth it because I've got a passion about doing it. And you know, one of the strengths that I pull on when times get tough is how I started this business. So those of your listeners who've been through tough times, that can actually really benefit you to say, hey, listen, I made it through this. And if I can make it through that, then I can make it through what I'm doing right now. You know, I started my business going through a divorce that I never expected to happen. And I was working three jobs, seven days a week for 2 years.
Wow.
That was what... And that's what it took for me to do it. And I'm not trying to say there are people who wouldn't have done that. Maybe everybody would have done that. I don't know. I don't think so. But but to me, there was once I got past that and I said, if I can start this business with that situation, then as times get rough, you know, it's like, listen, you were strong back then. You can do it again. And so and so that's a message to your listeners that if they're struggling now, you know, maybe you can get some strength from what you did before that you surprised yourself having done.
Right. And to look at past successes and to see what you did in the past to kind of motivate you. I think that's great advice. And it's interesting how you talked about, you know, you do what you have, you do what you do because you like it and you have the passion for it. And obviously you worked very hard at it. You know, I think I heard this from Oprah that, you know, she said that she does what she does because she enjoys it primarily. And the money she gets from it is just a bonus. You know, I think that for you, that's the same thing where you do what you do because you enjoy it. But the success you have and the money you have is just a bonus. You know, you didn't do it for the money. You know, if you're just doing it for the money, you're probably going to struggle. But you're doing it. You have to do it because you really, really like to do it. And that's what's going to keep you in the game. You know.
Absolutely. You know, we had talked a little earlier about the coaching world and how so many people are out there coaching and, you know, do you have any advice for coaches? And you know, as I thought about that question, one of the things is, you know, first thing, if you're thinking about being a coach in any particular topic, go around and ask all of your friends and all of your family members who know you really well. Am I the type of person, the person that you've known for years and years and years? Am I a helper? Will I go out of my way to help somebody and not necessarily need to get something in return for it? Is my whole nature that one of giving just because I love giving and helping and I don't really need to get anything back? Because if you're wanting to be a coach and that is not your attitude and that's not your personality, then then I there's a caution there for me, you know, because let's face it, in a coaching role, you're going to give away 90 to 95% of what you do. You're only going to make money coming back. And so if you're only in it for the money, when the times get tough, you're not going to want it badly enough because it's not part of your passion.
So you have to enjoy it, and you have to it has to be something you like in order for you to truly be committed and to succeed, of course. I truly believe that. And so it's curious. So obviously there's so many coaches. I'm sure there's probably a lot of people who do what you do and probably not as well as you do it, of course. But I'm curious.
We would all like to think that, wouldn't we?
But I'm sure you're the Michael Jordan of coaching in this arena when it comes to the workplace. And I'm curious, what makes you stand out as a coach? Like what makes you unique? Like what's your competitive advantage, so to speak?
You know, you mentioned my background in the introduction. And that is a big part of it. I've got 2 degrees that are very soft skills, and I'm also a financial planner, which is highly analytical. So if I'm dealing with an HR person or somebody who's very feeling oriented, I can touch base with them. If I got a real analytical person, I can deal with them also. I've worked corporate jobs. I've worked skilled labor jobs. I've dug ditches. I've worked on assembly lines. My background, I've done about, you know, way more jobs than any one person needs to do. But the beauty of that, is when I'm talking to somebody who's working on a manufacturing floor, I know what that's like, and I know what they're going through, and so I know how to help them. When I'm talking to an entrepreneur, I know what you're going through. And so that wandering path, let's say, Luke, that I've taken on my career has actually helped me now with the number of years of experience doing so many different things and always changing when I was unhappy doing what I was doing at the time. You know, I think that's the other thing, is to constantly evaluate where you are. Just because you decided to get a degree in this area or start this business, if now you're not enjoying it, well, it's time to move and go somewhere else, because my belief is life is too short. We're not here to suffer through it. We're here to continue to love it. And the only way that happens is if you make adjustments in your in what you're doing.
Yeah, and that's so important for people to understand. And thank you for sharing that. That, you know, it is. You know, we talked about perseverance. That you got to stick. You got to stick with it. But obviously, there are appropriate times to quit something. You know, and so it's tricky. You know, obviously, you want to stick with stuff, but then, you know, it's foolish to just stick with something that's not working. You got to make that distinction when to know when to quit, but when not to quit. And that's so important. I think more and more people are realizing that. And it's curious. So what puts you apart, or, you know, makes you unique and effective, is that your background, you've had blue collar, you have white collar jobs, which is amazing. And you are skilled in the areas of finance as a financial planner. And you know how to deal with different personalities, so to speak, you know, with your background in psychology and counseling. You know how to obviously talk to people. So that's amazing. Not very few coaches have that kind of, you know, experience and skills. And you talked about soft skills, which I think is so important. And I'm sure you're you know, you know how to utilize soft skills as well as hard skills. So I guess both are very good, but you know when to apply it, which is great. So I'm guessing over the decades, over the years, you've probably helped many people. You said you've been in the education field for about, I think, 40 years. If I'm not correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
Wow, that's amazing. So I'm sure you've helped a lot of people. I mean, can you tell us some of your most moving or entertaining stories from your career or life?
You mentioned at the beginning in the introduction about that I had worked at NASA. You know, to get it, it's like, how do you get a gig where you're working, where you're teaching at NASA? And I'm teaching in Johnson Space Center down in Houston, where the astronauts are. I've had astronauts in my class. And I got that. I was teaching in another company, and NASA was in the process of designing their leadership development program. And so they had a team of people, HR people, training people, and they asked to monitor my class.
Wow.
And from them seeing my teaching style, they said, we want your course. And so it was actually, you know, don't look at Craig's resume, watch him teach. And that got me the gig. And I can tell you, when you tell people that you work at NASA, the beautiful part about that is, this is comical to me. The beautiful part is they think all of a sudden in their eyes, your IQ goes way up. And it's like, listen, I'm not really any smarter than I was before I worked at NASA, but if you want to think so, that's perfect. I love that kind of thing. So it's really been a feather in my cap. I love going to NASA. My course down there, the feedback course, is required of everybody in leadership. So I have all the heavy hitters, all the division and department branches. So I have The person who was in charge of all of robotics for NASA is in my class. And so the beautiful part is I always ask those people, I need a tour of your area. So I have seen the lunar display. I've been on mission control. I've been, you know, I've been everywhere. And so it's been a really beautiful experience, kind of a real highlight to go down there and see the amazing stuff that they do. And then another thing you mentioned earlier was the Olympics. The 1996 Olympics were held in Atlanta. And after the Olympics were over, the Olympic Committee wanted to help all the people who had quit their jobs to work the Olympics. They wanted to help them rewrite their resumes to get another job. And so out of about 200 applicants who wanted to do that, I was selected. So I got a chance I got a chance to go downtown and deliver all these workshops on how to rewrite your resume. And the Olympic banners were behind me and every session was videotaped. And, and then after that, I did a workshop for Olympic athletes.
Because
a lot of them, they go from their college team to the national team to the Olympic team, and they've never really found a job for themselves because the Olympic Committee does it for them. And so they said, we want to help these people develop the skills. And so I had 23 Olympic athletes right after the Olympics were over in a classroom. And that was just, I was like, I don't even know that my feet touched the floor the whole time. I mean, you know, it's like these people were at the top of their careers, and they were listening to me, and it was almost surreal, Luke.
Wow. That's amazing. Yeah. That's amazing. And it's interesting how this all started, because I think some people in the beginning of the story, some people saw you teach, and they said, well, I think you got something there. You're a good teacher. And then and you found out what your talent was, and it's taken you from Olympics and NASA. It's amazing. And
it was something initially that I was resisting. I didn't want to teach. And speaking has always come easy to me. In my high school, I was the vice president and then the president of student body. So I was always in, and even at 14, 15, 16 years old, it didn't bother me at all to get up in front of 200, 500 people and deliver a speech. So that came naturally to me, but I didn't really see myself doing that for a living. And that was the big change when I finally, that when that light bulb went off, it was a beautiful moment. And I am extremely fortunate to have noticed that and paid attention to it early on, so that I've had a very long career of essentially doing things that I love for the last 40 years.
That's amazing. And, you know, not everyone could say that. And, you know, and obviously, and some people also pointed out that skill that you had in you as well. And you saw it there all along and you had it all along. That's amazing. And, you know, it's interesting how certain things may have happened by accident. I don't know if that's the universe. You know, when you taught, I think when you subbed for a class, you realized what you wanted to do specifically as a teacher in terms of teaching people in a classroom setting. So it's interesting how that sort of thing happened, quote unquote, by accident. But maybe it wasn't by accident; it was divine providence, so to speak.
Right.
And it's interesting how talents came together with fortunate accidents and skills, obviously, and hard work, created something very special, which is you, of course, in your life and career. And it's interesting because I'm thinking about maybe interning at NASA, so I can put that on my resume so people would be impressed with me. It's a sort of hack.
Yeah, absolutely. Use my name as a reference.
I'm going to do it.
I don't know if that'll help or not. Maybe it'll hurt. I don't know. depends on who you send it to.
I'm going to find a way to slip in the word NASA and see. I want people to view me as much smarter. So thank you for that.
I guarantee you that they will. You mentioned that you're interning or doing anything at NASA. People will go, oh, really? And all of a sudden you see that, like they step back a little bit. The interesting thing is that when I'm down there teaching every class that I teach, I say that to them. I said, I want to thank you for allowing me to teach here because I get an IQ boost every time I talk about this to people who are not here working here. And of course, they all laugh. Wow. They love it. You know, it is a place that if you want to talk about people who love what they do, I have not found an organization that I've ever worked in, and I've been extremely fortunate to work in NASA, Southern Company, IBM, UPS, American Express, Delta. I mean, I just very, very fortunate. But NASA, they are doing stuff that they believe is special, and they love it. You know, how many people are going to Mars? You know, it's only them. There's no competition there. You know, so. Very cool place to work, for sure.
Yeah. The closest I've been to NASA is visiting the Air and Space Museum in D.C., and so I have to figure out a way to go beyond that, of course.
That's a start.
Yes. And you taught the Olympic some Olympic athletes, which is amazing. Those guys are at the prime of the top of their pinnacle of their careers, which is that's just awesome. I would have had my feet not touch the ground as well, like you had described.
It was amazing, just kind of a magical experience. But you know, the title of the book and the online course, I Got the Job, that came from comments from my students. So when you say, who have you helped? I didn't really write that. They wrote it for me. Students would come into me, and this is, I've been teaching interviewing for 40 years. They would come into the class, exit the class, go interview for another job, get the job, and email me back, "Hey, Craig, thanks for the help. I got the job." And I have had that in an email hundreds of times. And so that was, number one, that was validation that what I was teaching was helping people, which is why I wanted to get it to all the people out there now who really need it.
Yeah.
But it also made the perfect book title. It's like, this is what everybody says. You know, it's almost like if you were to go interview for a job tomorrow and your best friend knew about it, as soon as they contacted you, they'd say, "Luke, how did it go? What would come out of your mouth? Hey, I got the job. The title wrote itself. It was that. And so I thank all my students for that.
Yeah, sometimes the title just comes to you. I can't think of any better title, so I think that's excellent. And they helped you write the book with their experiences and, with that awesome title.
Absolutely. You know, I have learned easily as much from my students telling me all of their experiences as I learned on my own with research and that type thing. Because as people come into my class, the first thing I say is, "Tell me about your interviewing experiences."
Yeah.
And then they tell me all the things and all the mistakes and all the feedback they got. So all I've got to do is be a great listener and collect all that information and then use that to teach other people. And they are clearly responsible for half of the information in the book, no doubt.
Wow. That's amazing that you as a teacher learn from your students. Just by listening and giving them probing questions, and that's just awesome. And my hat is off to you, sir, for helping folks, you know, find a job and achieving that dignity. A lot of times that self-worth boost that comes with it, having a job. I'm curious. Obviously, interviewing helps to land a job, of course. But one of the things that really does help, obviously, as you already know, is networking. You know, most jobs aren't advertised in newspapers or online message boards. I'm curious, how does someone go about networking to find work or to be referred to a job opportunity? And, you know, because we know it's so important, even for people who already have a job, to continue to look for a job and network as well so they can get a better job, because we know no job is secure So,
there are three things that readily come to mind when I think about networking. One is constant contact, and what is your initial intention? It needs to be, this is going to be an exchange, but I am willing first to give you something of value. And then then at some point I might be asking you for something. And so the third part of that is you have got to have what it takes to ask for what you want. So let me go back to the first one. When I say constant contact, so you meet somebody, they will, as busy as people are today, they will quickly forget you if you don't from time to time touch base with them. And one of the easy ways that you can touch base, and this is capitalizing on my second point, which is that of you've got to be willing to give them something of value, is maybe it's nothing more, Luke, than me saying to you 3 weeks from now, you know, hey, Luke, I really appreciated, you know, being on the show. How have things been going? I just happened to think about you when I was doing such and such or whatever, and I just wanted to send you this. I hope you're doing well. Now, so what am I giving? I'm giving you support. I'm giving you a remembrance of whatever. So now, oh, yeah, that's right. I had that thing with Craig. Oh, well, that was nice of him to say something like that. And then I've also maybe at some point got to say, Luke, I need your help. This is how you can help me. If you can, I'd appreciate it. If you can't, I totally understand. But and I think a lot of people when they talk about networking is, what can I get from you? That's typically the way people think about it. And I know that that is maybe your ultimate goal. But I think if you start out with, is there anything that I can do for you, I'd be happy to do that, because this has, over an extended period of time, got to be a win-win. It's the both of us have to benefit, or this is just not going to work long-term. And so I think a lot of people go into the networking piece, you know, make your contacts, offer something that you can do, tell them your situation, you know, that kind of thing. Stay in touch with them, and you got to be able to ask for what you want, because, you know, it's unfortunate that sometimes people, if we weren't so busy, maybe they would detect that. Hey, I think Craig needs my help. Nowadays, you got to like bang on their door and go, hey, I need your help to get their attention. So I think I think networking has changed in that way, that people are inundated with information. They're inundated with emails. And so how do you break through and become the person that they go, oh, absolutely. If Luke needs something from me, I'm going to, what do you need? I'll be happy to help you. That's the response that you want.
Yeah, by giving something valuable first and engaging that law of reciprocity. I think that the advice you just gave is excellent. And it also helps to remember people's birthdays and anniversaries and reach out to them. That's one way to keep contact.
Absolutely. I mean, some of the smallest things that are fairly simple, what I find is, even as I talk about it, whether it's interviewing or anything else, people aren't doing. When I do my leadership class and I say, hey, when you walk into the building, you know, because one comment I want to make going back to something that we said is, if you as a leader are not learning from your employees, you're making a huge mistake. You should be, you should be, they should be helping you become a better leader day by day by day, because you're paying attention to what you're doing, it's working for them, and those types of things. But I said, if you're walking in the building and you're passing by people's desks and you're not even saying anything, what is that communicating, and how different would that be if you did something so simple as to say, hey, Luke, man, how's it going? I'm not even waiting. I'm not going to stand there and wait for an answer. I'm just going to acknowledge you.
Yeah.
And because we have, you know, the whole internet, and especially with the pandemic, we're isolating ourselves so much. Thank gosh for just recognizing that I'm here and existing, you know? So, you know, all these small things will really come back to you and reward you with the networking and anything that you're doing. It's a matter of building relationships with people. And a lot of people are not going through the correct steps or enough steps to really build solid connections. You know, it's like I've got so many friends on Facebook. Yeah, well, those are acquaintances. Those aren't really friends. You know, how many people would bend over backwards for you? And how did your relationship get to that state? Well, there's something that went on if somebody's willing to go out of their way to help you, you know?
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And that's so true. And thank you so much for that advice. Obviously, a lot because of the crisis and whatnot, people are trying to build relationships online, but nothing, I've been told, will take the place of in-person communication and networking. And I'm sure you agree. We're social animals.
I do.
You need the high tech's important, but you need the high touch. I totally agree. And, you know, the longest lived people in the world, they say, are people that socially, they have strong social relationships. They're very involved with their community and their families, and they're not isolated. And even above and beyond eating right and getting exercise, they found that this social component, mm-hmm. that human element, is very key to why the longest lived people are the longest lived people. So there's something to it. These relations.
Yeah, I tend to believe that the easier it is for you to do, the less valued it will be by the other person. And I kind of relate this to, let's say, a teenager wanting to get a date. The easiest thing in the world is for me to write you an email, but that's easy for the other person to ignore. Harder is for me to pick up a phone, but that's also harder for the person to ignore. The hardest for me to do is to walk up to you and ask you out for a date, but the hardest for the other person to say no is when you're right in front of them. So, you know, when you use that analogy, you can do the same thing with relationships with people. If it's easy to do, they're probably not going to value it much. And I recognize we can't do a lot of face-to-face right now, but eventually we will. And will people, when that happens, will people then gravitate back to that? Will they start saying, oh, I need to start doing more of this in-person thing as opposed to posting my resume online and hoping somebody finds it? Why don't I go and try to talk to some people?
Yeah, that's so important, obviously. And you're obviously skilled in teaching people how to have a good job hunt. You don't just focus, obviously, on interview, which is important, obviously. But obviously you have to get your foot in the door for the interview, and you specialize in that process, of course, and are very knowledgeable of it.
Right.
Thank you for the knowledge you've shared. And it's interesting, And, you know, people pay you money to get this kind of advice and feedback. And so thank you so much for sharing it. Obviously, if people go to you and pay you for it, you'd, of course, go into more detail, of course. But thank you for the information that you have shared. And I think it's going to help many people. And, you know, there's a lot of people who are teachers and who'd like to do what you're doing and have the success that you're having. And you touched on this before with that little nugget of, you know, how you have to do it because you want to help people and for no other reason. I'm curious, in addition to that, and it wasn't a little nugget, it was a big one, sorry, but what advice would you give to someone who wants to be a coach or a teacher like yourself?
Well, the first thing is to, again, it's got to be in your area of passion. It's got to be something that you – it's got to be something that you have enough experience in to be a coach. Coaching right now, to me, and I'm not trying to step on any toes, it's kind of popular. Yeah. You know, everybody wants to be a coach. And why is that the case? Because you really want to help people, or you just want to make money through it, or you want to be seen as the authority. I'm not really sure what that goes back to. But it's a matter of, number one, I've got to be driven by a passion to do it. If the money wasn't there, would I still be doing it? And then one really, really, really critical thing, Luke, is my life aligned with what I am giving advice on? If I'm a relationship coach and I'm struggling with relationships, I got no business being a relationship coach. If I'm trying to be a financial coach and I'm in financial distress, I got no business being a coach. You know, one of the people that I like to listen to, and unfortunately she passed away recently, her name is Louise Hay, H-A-Y. Yeah. She says, if you're going to listen to people, listen to the winners. Listen to the people who have proven by their behavior that they're living what they're suggesting for you to do. And so this is one of the really difficult questions that people have got to ask themselves. You know, what? There's no replacement for experience. So number one, how much experience do I have in the content area I'm wanting to be a coach in? Is my life good to go in that area? Have I also positioned myself where if this doesn't work, I'm not going to be suffering? You know, so it's all those, do I have enough money in the bank? Do I have enough this? Do I have enough knowledge? Once I run out of help, once I run out of helping my friends, what else happens? You know, because a lot of people, and one other thing that I would encourage people who, anybody want to start any kind of business, is to read the book, The E-Myth.
By Michael E. Gerber.
By Michael E. Gerber. Yeah, it used to be the E-Myth, and now it's the E-Myth updated, or there's another word there that I can't remember. Absolutely.
Different version.
You know, your chance of success in small business is so slim. You have got to avail yourself of all the pitfalls and all the things you need to be doing to increase your chances of being successful. So that is an absolute must for anybody, whether you're going into coaching or going into anything else.
Right. Any kind of entrepreneurial endeavor,
of course.
And, thank you so much for that advice. And it's interesting how the industry of coaching has, there's a low barrier to entry. It's not like being a financial advisor or planner where you have to pass tests.
Right.
You know, like this. Anyone can also coach. So it attracts a lot of, you know, quacks and charlatans, unfortunately. But every industry has these kinds of people in it. But unfortunately, because of the low barrier to entry, it maybe has more of it. The coaching industry has more of it than other industries. I'm curious, Tony Robbins talks about how success leaves clues. So I totally agree that you should seek mentors that are at the level that you want to be at, and coaches that are at the level that you want to be at in order to take, you know, hire them or whatnot. And it's interesting how you talked about how entrepreneurs should have money in the bank. And you talked about about the rainy day fund. It reminds me of that Aesop's fable about the grasshopper and the ants. You know, how the ants saved for the winter and the hibernation or whatnot, and the grasshopper didn't and paid the price. So it's a children's story that it's always resonated and stuck with me. So definitely always be prepared. You never know what might happen, as we see with this pandemic. So I think that's excellent advice for coaches, for people who want to be coaches or who want to be entrepreneurs and whatnot. Thank you so much for all the tips you've given. So I'm curious, what advice would you give to someone who's looking to be a coach? Now, they could come to you, obviously, for advice in the arenas that you coach in, which I think would be a great decision. But overall, obviously you can't coach everyone. But what advice would you give to someone who's looking for a coach?
Yeah, there are lots of, believe me, there's enough room for everybody out there to make a living. We're not stealing from each other, so to speak.
Yeah,
and
got it.
So if I'm looking for a coach in any particular area, I'm looking for some of the very same things that I just mentioned. I'm looking for, can I detect that they are living a lifestyle that proves that they're taking their own advice, that they've already lived it, that they are successful. I will typically find two or three. I don't really look for one, and then I want to narrow it, and then I want to start comparing, and I will compare things like what else can I find about them, about their background, what part of that matches up with mine, if anything. Do we have things in common? Because if we do have things in common, they're liable to be better able to relate to me. What is what is the breadth of their experience? You know, how wide is their experience? If they're very narrow and they only know one thing, then once we've covered that, I'm pretty much locked into finding somebody else. So I may take somebody who's got a little bit more experience, broader than I will somebody who is a content expert or a subject expert, maybe something like that. You know, the experience thing, you know, there's no substitute for experience. And that doesn't suggest that you can't be brand new starting out and have by far the best advice. But the saying, the wise old owl, that word old is in there for a reason. Wisdom comes from having accumulated layer upon layer upon layer of knowledge, not just the most current knowledge at the time. And so if somebody comes to me with an issue, and I've been doing this for 40 years, somewhere back in my past, I've had that very same issue before.
Right.
And the, right. and the less experience that you have, of course, the less situations that you have to pull from. So to me, that's a big one. And I would even suggest that don't worry so much about the fact that the person you're seeking knowledge from or coaching from or whatever you want is advice from, guidance from, they don't even have to be in your own generation. This could be somebody in a younger generation than you if you have to connect with. It could be somebody in an older generation. I think sometimes we look for, you know, people who are our own age or whatever, more comfortable there. That may not be the best decision.
Right.
So, and then I would also look at, am I this person's target market as a customer? So, for instance, when I was doing financial planning, there was in my client base, there were so many people who made X number of dollars, and then so many people made 2X, and so many people made 3X. But the majority of people I worked with were this profile. Well, you know, I don't want to be, if you're a financial planner and you're used to dealing with people who are making $500,000 a year, and I'm making $60,000 a year, I am low man on your totem pole. Okay, you may take me as a coach or as a customer or whatever, but I'm really not your bread and butter. And so then you've got to do some research on who is this person's client base or customer base, and do I fit in the middle there, or am I in the top end of that? And that's what you would want, I would think, because then you're going to get more time and attention, because that's the person that this coach is focusing on the most.
Right, definitely. And thank you so much for that advice. It's interesting how you talked about how you gather a few, like three, and then narrow it down. And I think that's so important. It's like you're auditioning or holding an audition or shopping around.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah. You know, it's very similar to the question that you asked me earlier. So what makes me stand out? What do I have going for me? Yeah. I think, Luke, that's a perfect question to ask a coach.
Right.
Please convince me that I should hire you rather than somebody else. And if they don't have a good, strong answer, that's a clear indication that you're in the wrong place.
Yeah, definitely. And that's I think that's a great buying question as well. Yeah, I would definitely use it when I eventually look for a coach. I think everyone needs to have a coach, because I think, you know, it's interesting. Coaches can hold you accountable. And you know, we talked about human relationships, the importance of human beings being around you face to face. You know, humans can hold you accountable. You know, a book can't hold you accountable. A magazine article and social media post, blog can't hold you accountable. But a human being can hold you accountable and think
and
accountability.
And talking more about that relationship, Luke, you have got to feel comfortable with this person.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't care what their credentials are. I don't care everything else that I just talked about. If they if they check every box, if you don't feel comfortable being open and honest, and here's the big word, and trusting that person, then you need to turn around and go somewhere else. Because let's face it, when you are letting somebody influence you, and I think it is scary now because we talk about social media influencers, and I that just makes, let's not even go there, because it makes me crazy. The people that massive people are listening to, and it's like you're listening to somebody who doesn't know a thing about what they're talking about. So so if you are openly allowing this person to influence you, you better have a huge comfort level and a huge trust level, because you are going to reap the benefits or suffer the consequences of whatever their advice is.
That's definitely true. And, and it's so important to trust that individual, because this is someone you're going to share a lot of intimate details about your life with as well.
Sure.
Influence your life with their advice. So, you definitely have to have that trust. And thank you for all the advice you provided in terms of how to look for a coach. And it's curious, you talked about in the beginning of your answer the idea of abundance, that it's not a zero-sum game. There's enough for everybody. And, you know, and that's so important for people to have that mentality. No one's stealing clients away from you. So, but obviously you still have to have that competitive advantage that, I guess, look for that niche, so to speak. Maybe that helps in terms of
Yeah, I think with that, as you're talking to prospective people who might allow influence you, coaches or whatever, are they walking a fine line, both sides of the rail, never taking a stance on something, or are they saying, this is what I stand for, this is what I believe in, this is what I suggest for you? You know, I really believe because I am not right for everybody. People may listen to this broadcast and say, you know, I really don't like Craig because of this or that or whatever. And on the flip side, somebody may go, man, that guy sounds perfect for me. Mm. I'm okay with that. I don't think as a coach you're going to be appropriate for everybody. And so it's a matter of saying, this is my advice. I'll hang my hat on this, and you can take this to the bank and hold me accountable for this. And if they're not willing to do that, that should be a red flag to you. Because now what they're doing is trying to say, I need customers and or clients or whatever you want to call them, and I'm willing to say whatever will get you to be one of my clients, as opposed to this is what I suggest. And if that is not to your liking, and because of that you don't trust me, then I encourage you to go look for somebody else. I will tell people that in a heartbeat. It's like, listen, this is what I believe interviews are about, or this is what I believe leadership is about. And if you don't believe that, then tell me. I'll give you your money back because you need to go find somebody else. I'm not right for you. And and that only comes from the fact that I think that there's enough room out there for everybody to be successful without necessarily having to take from somebody else. I'm not taking anything away from you. There's enough for you and enough for me and enough for everybody else. And if we see it that way, then we don't feel uncomfortable with somebody choosing somebody else. Okay, that was yours, and then the next one will be mine, and we'll all be happy, kind of thing.
Yeah, that's amazing advice. And, you know, you come off, too, as non-pushy, non-desperate, and I think that may make people want to, you know, be your customer even more when you have that posture of, you know, look, I'm not for everybody, and maybe I'm not right for you. Maybe, you know, someone else is better for you. That sometimes can help you sell your services or product even more when you have that attitude and customers feel that confidence. And I don't know what your experience has been in that regard, but it definitely would impress me when a salesperson is non-pushy, non-desperate. And
my belief is this. Yeah. We talked about the entrepreneurship, and I know a lot of your listeners may be thinking about doing that. Yeah. My personal belief, and I could be wrong with this, but I don't think you stay in business for 32 years, as I have, without providing value to your customers. If you're not giving them something that they want, they're not going to come back, and you're going to be out of business. Yeah. So I feel very comfortable saying, you know, I'm blessed to have found what I love to do. I'm doing okay doing it. Right now, times are tough. I'm not going to try to back away from that. But it's like, you know, I'm not going to change what I'm doing, my approach, what I stand for, all that type of thing, you know, to appeal to more people. And all I'd be doing is throwing a little BS their way because I'm really not believing what I'm saying. You know?
Right. So. No, I totally understand that. And and thank you for that. And I think it's important to only work with customers that you feel you can provide value to, of course, and that's how you stay in business. So I'm curious. You've talked a lot about a lot of these important life lessons and success principles that you follow, and you've shared many of them with us. In addition to the ones you've already shared, is there any other critical life lessons that you'd like folks to know?
The one that is other than I am, at least my friends say that I am one of the most disciplined people that they will ever met. I think discipline creates freedom. What I mean by that is if I am disciplined to do the things that I know are going to make me happy and make me successful by making sure I do those, even if I don't want to do them, and if they're tough to do, and I resist doing, even if I push myself to do them, that then creates the freedom to have the life that I want to have.
Mm.
You know, I'm a big believer that we have created the life that we have primarily, not exclusively, primarily by the choices that we've made.
Mm.
So I am very cognizant of the choices that we make. You know, Luke, I think I read something a little while back, and they said we make kind of unconsciously, subconsciously, and consciously 35,000 choices a day. And, of course, a lot of these we're not aware of. But it's a matter of, I believe, making more of the choices that we're making conscious. Okay, I made a choice right now to sit down in front of the TV like a bump on a log when I could have been reading something to educate myself to get one step closer. And it's only a half hour, but that was a half hour that I made that choice. So now if my business is not going where I want it to go, I've got to look at I'm not dedicating my time to do that. You know, that you know, to me, that's a big one. And then combined with that, the discipline part is I believe that shutting down, stopping, slowing the presses, and doing absolutely nothing is one of the most beneficial things that you can ever do. I think that the majority of people in life are, you know, the term New York minute is there for a reason. you know, how much can people do in a minute? I mean, I think the majority of people right now are like the little rat on the wheel. You know, we're going 100 miles an hour, and we don't have any time to sit down and evaluate where we are. You know, going back to the we're here to be enjoy life, the only way you assess that is to be able to say, you know, for the next, put in whatever time frame works for you. I used to say, I used to tell people, this is years ago when I was teaching college, I'd say, take a bottle of wine and go sit under a tree for 6 hours. Well, eventually I had to change that story because people heard me say, take a bottle of wine like I was encouraging alcoholism. So you know how people are. So anyway, the whole point of wine was to relax. Don't go there intending to think about anything. Don't go there trying to write something down. Don't take any music with you.
Right.
Go there and just quiet the noise in your life.
Yeah.
My belief is every answer that you are searching for is in the universe dying to tell you what it is if you would just stop all the noise so you can hear that message. And so I think too many people are trying to work hard to create what they're wanting, and they need to every now and then shut down and just go and let the world talk to them. I guarantee you, if you've got something going wrong in your life, when you quiet all the noise, that you'll think about it. It'll come to you, and probably what you should be doing to correct it will also come to you. But why do a lot of people busy themselves? For two reasons. One is because they think that they've got to manifest this. They've got to create it. They've got to make it happen. That's the one thing. And the other part is they are afraid of quieting the noise they don't want to hear the messages because their life is a disaster. So they busy themselves so they don't have to hear it. So life lesson to me is slow down, shut it down. You know, get off the grid, whatever you want to call it, and do it on a regular basis so that you can then assess where you are in this grand scheme to get wherever you want to go.
Right. Wonderful. That's wonderful advice. And just to recap, the importance of, you talked about the importance of self-discipline. Discipline leads to freedom. And,
oh, my gosh,
And it's the importance of time. Time is perhaps the most valuable commodity one has. So use it wisely instead of, you know, we're always making choices with our time and tens of thousands of choices. So I totally believe that. And the importance of slowing down to hear that voice to slow down and relax. And, you know, I think some of the most successful people in the world do that. They do things like meditation. They engage in stillness. And that's when ideas come to them. you know.
Well, I don't know if you would consider, I don't know if you consider Bill Gates and Warren Buffett to be successful, but if you talk to them or you do any research on them, they will both say one of the most valuable things that they do is when they do nothing. That's when all the it's like, when are most people creative? They're creative when they're not intentionally thinking of the answer. It just comes to them in a moment of quiet or doing whatever. And so once you discover that and you realize the benefit of that, you have a much better chance of building that into your daily or weekly regimen, whatever works for you. You know, I'm not going to try to prescribe, you know, 15 minutes a day or 30 minutes a day or 2 hours a week, whatever it takes for you. But more people would benefit by it, I have no doubt.
Definitely. And I'm curious, and thank you so much for all those life lessons you shared with us. What book recommendations are your top? I know you mentioned a few already, but what are your top book recommendations for folks?
Yeah, the two people that I there's actually three people that I have reread their book at least 10 times minimum. Mm. Probably one of them, Deepak Chopra. I love his stuff. The book that I continue to read is The Seven Spiritual Laws of Success. And Deepak, I like reading. I don't particularly like watching his videos or listening. Louise Hay is just the opposite of that. I love listening to her. Don't like reading her stuff. Basically, basically anything that Louise Hay does, there is one thing that I believe has helped me the most, and that is her. It's a CD on. It's titled Receiving Prosperity.
Okay.
And she talks about prosperity being an abundance of everything that's available, abundance of love, an abundance of time, an abundance of kindness, an abundance of money. So it's not just about money. It's about welcoming into your life. I open myself to all good. Anything that's good in the world that wants to come into my life, bring it on. I'm ready for it, that type thing. And then there's somebody who is had passed away a long time ago that talks about everything begins with a thought. And so if you're wanting to if you're wanting to create or manifest anything in your life, the first thing you need to do is start thinking about it and create whatever situation you want in thought.
Right.
I need to think about the life I'm going to have when I change my situation from what it is right now to whatever you want, a job, more money, a better relationship, doesn't make any difference. And her name is Venice Bloodworth. And I'm trying to think of the name of the, or the title of that book now, The Key to Yourself. The Key to Yourself. And so those are the ones that I will reread those, Luke, over and over and over, because it's kind of, you know, people talk about daily affirmations or daily scriptures or whatever. While I don't do those, I do them kind of in the same way. Whatever little piece I read, most of their material is something that you can listen to or look at for 2 minutes and benefit from. So it's not, I gotta read for a half hour or I gotta watch for, you know, an hour. I can watch or read for 2 minutes and benefit from it. And that is exactly the same way that I organized my interviewing skills book and the online course. The online course is 3 hours and it's 58 separate videos. And so what I know about listeners is, or watchers or readers, is they don't want to sit down and read for a long period. They want to read for 3 minutes, get something, and then take it with them and go. And so that's the way I organize my stuff, and I'm really glad that I did it that way, because people are finding it helpful to not have to view or listen for a long period of time.
Got it. And thank you so much for that. And are you ever going to write a book yourself about your life? I think you'd make a great biography or autobiography.
Thank you. I appreciate that. The book that is already, I would say, Luke, 2/3 written is the journey starting 4 years ago of when, in a 40-day period of time, we lost 95% of our business now. I don't know whether this was just happenstance or I was smart. I'm not real sure. But I'm glad that it happened anyway. And that is that when that happened, I started journaling what was happening on this journey. So I have got 4 years worth of journal entries about this pathway that I'm on, getting back to what I call relevance, where now, people want my stuff. They like my stuff, and so now I'm relevant again. And I think this is something we started the conversation with, this about the people out of work. I think that's one of their challenges. How do I become relevant again? I became irrelevant when I lost my job, and now nobody seems to want me. I'm not making a contribution to society. How do I become relevant? So that book is, and I also started shooting videos. So I probably got 35 videos that go along with that. What I am waiting for to collate all of that and organize it is to experience the success that I've been searching for in the 4 years, because I know, and I want to wait for that to happen before I put the book together, because I want that tone of success I want the listener or the reader to hear it from the first page all the way through. And so I've already started on that, and maybe the book after that will be the one that is the life story. I don't know. I've already got a lot of I got a lot of titles. I was in my high school. I kicked the first ever field goal in my high school. In my high school's history, and so a friend of mine said, like, that should be a great title of a book, The First Field Goal Ever, as the story of mine. So I don't know when that one's going to happen, but the other one, this 40 days journey to relevance is one that is, two-thirds written, and I'm just waiting for the floods to come in and bestow all the things we've been working for the last couple of years on us.
Okay. Wonderful. Well, I think that's amazing. And I'm definitely going to buy it when it comes out. I'll be the first person online. So you have at least one customer. And
I love it. I love it. I think a lot of people, what I've gone through in the last 4 years, lot of people have gone through just this previous year. They had their whole existence wiped away through no fault of their own. And so now I am on the road to recovery, and soon will be, hopefully. And my hope is that they will benefit with their struggle by reading how I process mine.
Wonderful. Definitely. I think you're an inspiration, and I think you inspire many people by writing a book, of course. And I'm curious, would you ever do your own podcast? I think it'd be great as a podcast host.
You connected with my business development person, Tom, and we are already in the process of creating a podcast with some of the stuff I'm on, some of the videos, recycling some stuff, and we're just wanting to move into that arena when the timing is right. This is, again, one of those entrepreneurial decisions. I don't want to be so spread out that quality suffers. Quality to me is of utmost importance. And so when the time is right, we'll launch that. We're putting all the pieces in places right now. But, that's something that we definitely have thought about, because it's also an opportunity for me to give others, exposure. Let them tell their story, and that's that whole back and forth thing that we were talking about earlier.
Yeah, definitely. I think everyone should have a podcast. That's what Seth Godin, the marketing guru, says, and that podcasting is like the new blogging. So I'm a fan of this kind of platform, and I think you do great. I think you're a great talker. You have a great sense of humor, can tell jokes. I think you could really excel with the podcast. I would listen to it. So you have at least one person, I'm sure more.
We got to start somewhere, right?
Yeah, that's right. So I just wanted to go ahead and thank you for being a guest on the show and for all the answers to the questions you provided. And those book recommendations, I'm definitely going to check them out. Thank you so much. So I'm sure the audience learned a lot from you. So, again, thank you for being a guest. Can you go ahead and describe all the ways people can get in touch with you to put you in their network or to utilize, or if they know someone who can utilize your services?
Sure. The easiest way to get to just about every place in social media that I am is by going to my blog. And that is the word. It is perspectives.craigdivizio.com. If you go there, you can get to the book, which is available on Amazon. If you go there, you can get to both online courses from there. You can get to YouTube. You know, we just went over 1,300 subscribers on YouTube, and that's exciting for me.
Yeah.
And we're also on LinkedIn, and we're on basically all the other platforms. We're on Twitter and Facebook, and you can get to all of the other places from there, rather than giving several different addresses.
Right.
If they just go to perspectives.craigdivizio.com, they can get to pretty much every platform that we're on and sign up for the weekly newsletter that I send out and get to YouTube to watch. I've got about almost 100 videos on YouTube now. So there's a lot of stuff out there that they can access. And, of course, there's also a way they can contact me if they're interested in something beside what is already residing on social media.
Definitely. And I, of course, want that newsletter. So I'm going to take a hop over there. And just so you know, thank you for the information you provided. We will also have that web address located in the episode description box so people can see it or read it there. And so people really can see it there. So thank you so much for coming on as a guest. I wanted to thank the audience for listening. This is an episode I'll be listening and re-listening to, and I think many others will as well. I'm going to go ahead and give you the last word or the send off. Is there anything else, anything final you want to mention?
Other than, Luke, it was a pleasure to be on your show. It's an opportunity for me to talk about what I do and an opportunity for me to reach out to all the people who my heart goes out to right now who, in the same situation as me, they for no fault of their own, their whole life changed overnight. And I'm sensitive to that. And anything that I can do to help you get back to work, I'd be happy to help you in that vein. And I'm with you on that journey. And, keep fighting the good fight, because eventually they're going to get this pandemic under control and things are going to open up. And my sense, Luke, is that when things open up, they are going to open up quickly. And so if anybody is out of work, regardless of whether you utilize my materials or not, if you are out of work, my suggestion to you is start preparing for your interview now when things are kind of stagnant, because when it opens up, what you don't want to do is be caught napping and have a great interview coming up and now you're scrambling to get ready. So just take that, hey, let me get prepared in advance so that whenever the economy opens up, I can be the first one hired and walking around and telling all my friends who ask, hey, man, I got the job.
Yeah. Got it. Thank you so much for that. And thank you for coming on as a guest, and thank you to everyone in the audience. I'm going to see you guys in the next episode. Everyone, have a wonderful day. Take care, and bye-bye. Hey, guys, before you go, just real quick, if you can just do me a favor, if you can head over to the Apple Podcasts app, and if you're not there already, and if you can leave me a 5-star review, that would be great. If you love the show, if you can just go ahead and do that, and that will help to spread the word about the show, and other people can enjoy the show as much as you do. And so if you can do that, that would mean the world to me. And also, if you want to email me with any feedback or any praise or support,
Please feel free to go ahead and do that. And you can also email me to request to be put on our email list. We can send you out emails when new episodes come out. So thank you very much for being a fan of the show. Thank you for listening to the show and supporting the show. So if you can do that, go out and give us a 5-star review on the Apple Podcast app. That would be great. And if you can email us so we can put you on the email list and email us with feedback and praise, that'd be amazing. Thank you so much, and I'll see you guys in the next episode. Take care. Bye-bye.